So the topic is polytheism and monotheism in B'nai Rachel. So I'm going to start off with Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech comes from Rachel. And this is a microcosm of a larger issue that we're going to try to address. But for the most part, I'm going to deal with a large microcosm, but give me a couple of moments. Shaul HaMelech, on the one hand, goes and spends his time trying to eradicate idolatry. On the other hand, when he finds himself in a very difficult situation, he goes and he searches out idolatry in order to try to get some kind of understanding. This inner contradiction, as I said, is a microcosm of a larger issue, and the larger issue deals with B'nai Rachel. Of course, if we didn't note, so he is from Binyamin, which comes from Rachel. For the rest of the time, I'm going to deal with Yosef. But this way, no one can say to me, but you didn't deal with both B'nai Rachel. There I did. But this, the same problem we're going to see, and let's start with the first source. I am going to try to attempt to get through all the sources today. The reason why it seems so much is because we put it in English, but it's really not as much as it looks like, I think. And of course, the first three or four sources are only in Hebrew, but I will translate. The first is a Michilta, which is, again, really worthwhile noting, and there's a number of different contexts that we can approach it. But over here it says Shimon Ish Kitron, and those of us who don't know, the Michilta is an ancient source. Michilta would be the source at the same time as the Mishnah. Michilta says Shimon, and it's generally halachic, every now and then there is going to be an agadic statement, this is one. Shimon Ish Kitron Omer, Bizchut Atzmot Sheyosef Anu Krei Lachem Et Hayam. Which means, the Jews arrive at the sea, and it's saying, you know, we have this background of various midrashim, that these were idolaters, and these were idolaters, and so on. It's not exactly what it says here, but it says something else, which is almost as astounding. And that is, that it's almost like there would not have been the splitting of the sea, had there not been for one person who was there. And the one person who was there was not even a person who was alive. And that person, of course, is Yosef. Or it's not even Yosef as a person, it's his remains, and I'll read it again. It says, "Zchut atzmot shel Yosef ani korei lehem et hayam." I, by the way, just as an aside, I think that this is an interesting statement in terms of the teaching that it's as difficult to make shiduchim as kriyat yamsuf. Of course, kriyat yamsuf is not very difficult if you're God, right? It's not hard. So what makes it difficult? So let's continue. The proof that it gives is Shenemar Vayazov Bigdo Itzla Vayanos Hachutza Uchtiv Hayam Ra'a Vayanos. So the drasha over here is using the word Vayanos. The sea, and of course let's note that Vayanos in this context is not said in the Az Yashir, rather we had to go all the way to Tehillim, a retrospective of what happened there for real. So it says, Vayar Hayam, the sea saw something. Vayar Hayam, the sea saw something, not a seesaw, the sea saw, Vayanas, and then it ran away. So it says, what does it mean it ran away? Ah, Bizchut Atzmut Yosef, because Yosef went in, or into the house that day, and Mrs. Potiphar, you can have like Mrs. Robinson in the background now, that Mrs. Potiphar, she attempts to seduce Yosef, but rather it says he runs away. That's why Kriyat Yamsuf took place. Which means essentially that, if you want the Sheva Brachot idea, that Yosef had to go against his nature, go against hormones and so on, and be able to go against his nature. So therefore, bizchut of Yosef going against his nature, the sea went against its nature. And therefore, perhaps every marriage requires all of us to go against our nature a little bit to take someone else into our lives. So, as I said, you need to speak by Sheva Brachot, work on that. I didn't give you the whole thing, but work on it. But then, to continue along the Midrashic trail, we have source number two, which is found in other places as well. We just took this one. My preference always is when there's Nikud. That's the source that I take. How did they know where Yosef was buried? Amru, it was said, now those of you who noticed her in this last week's parsha, Serach Bat Asher, would not have found this if you searched for it, because sometimes the name is spelled with the Samach and sometimes with the Sin. So over here, Serach Bat Asher, Nishtairam Yato Hador, she's the one who stuck around for, and apparently she lives a real long time. He hodia et Moshe hechen Yosef kavur. She's the one who revealed to Moshe where Yosef was buried. Amdu mitzrayim va'asulo aron shel matechet v'shaku benilus b'moshe v'amadal anilus v'natal tzur v'chakak bo alei shor. So Moshe took something and he wrote down in this thing that he took, alei shor. Yosef, later on in the bracha, well, the alei shor, which is also a little more complex than I'm stating it now, because it's said by the brachot of Yaakov and it's said by the brachot of Moshe, but it's two different words which are used in the alei, is two different aleis. And alei shor, it's like a play on that. Alei shor, sure, come up. Yosef is considered to be like a shor, like an ox. That's very important, by the way. Yosef is like a shor, like an ox. Alei shor, Yosef, come up. Moshe writes this down. But Sabbath va'omer, and Moshe screamed and he said, Yosef, Yosef, higia shasha kadosh baruch hu goel banav. The time has come for the redemption to take place. V'shechina ma'kevet lecha. And the Shechina, as it were, is waiting for you. Yisrael v'nanei kavod ma'kvim lecha. And everyone's waiting. V'nanei kavod, Yisrael, everyone's waiting for you. Yosef, it's time to go back home. And the truth is, this is really a remarkable source. I hope to get back to it when we end. But it's a remarkable source because, of course, by the sale of Yosef, it was his brother saw him, and the brothers there, tells us, are Shimon and Levi. And Levi was responsible for this, for wanting to kill him, and later on for the sale. And now the time has come, and they have to really undo what they did, and they have to bring him back home. They're guilty of kidnapping, and the repercussions are all the way till this day, and now the time has come to take them back. And Moshe takes responsibility, which is also much more to say about that. Moshe takes responsibility. Maybe Moshe, more than anybody else, knows what it's like to be raised in a foreign culture. Right? Moshe knows what it's like to be raised in the palace. Maybe even Yosef looks up to his uncle. Sorry, Moshe looks up to his uncle Yosef and gets inspiration from him. But now the time has come, and all the other Jews are going looking for gold, looking for the silver, looking to borrow things. And the one person looking for Yosef is Moshe. And he's saying, Yosef, it's time to go. But remember that phrase. He writes down on this piece of metal, right? He writes, engraves, Alei Shor. Yosef, everyone's waiting, time to come back. And it says, Im atam megaleh atzmecha mutav, v'im lav areinu nekiyim mishvotcha. If you reveal yourself, then great. If not, then we can't wait any longer. And we will be cleared of the vow that we made. Miyad saf v'la arono shel Yosef. At that moment, the Aron rose up, which means Yosef made all of his brothers swear they'll take him home. It's interesting. Moshe now represents all the brothers. Moshe represents all of Klal Yisrael. Moshe's going to keep the vow. On the other hand, so let's make sure we understand this hand clearly. Yosef is the one, we'll see more about his fidelity to God. Moshe is the one, the whole redemption is waiting for Yosef. Yosef is the one that the splitting of the sea takes place because of Yosef. So we get all these elements about Yosef, and then, right? Alei Shor. Writing on this thing. Redemption takes place, and then we get to source number 3. And there's something, it's really in 4 that we'll see, but let's start with 3. There's something here which is so disturbing, and this is, again, this is the microcosm of our problem. And over here, it's not going to be clear at all why this happened. What are we talking about? We're talking about when the golden calf took place. They went and they somehow created this. V'yaseu egel masicha, and they made an egel. V'yomer alei Elohecha Yisrael, asher luchem eretz Yisrael. Here, Elu Elecha, here's your God Israel that took you out of Egypt. Rashi over here reports a tradition. Egel masicha, kevin sheshlichu lakur, bo machshavei eruv rav, sha'alu imayim imitzrayim v'asum b'kshafim. That once they threw this into this thing where you melt down the gold, the Erev Rav, and it's very convenient to always have Erev Rav that we can blame for all of our mistakes and problems, the Erev Rav, who were very adept at all kinds of Shafim. How do you want to translate that? Magic. V'yeshomer micha hayasham. And some say it was even micha. Shuyatzam itoch musi binyan. Shumtoech bo mitzrayim. V'hoyo biyado shem v'tas shakatav bo Moshe. And they had this thing that Moshe had written, alei shor. Alei shor. L'alot arunoshi yosem itoch milos v'shlich l'toch akor v'yatzah ha'egel. And they went and they took it and they threw it into this court, and then the eagle comes out. Why in the world are we connecting Yosef to the Chet HaEgel? What did Yosef ever do to deserve this? But I'm just saying, at the exact same time, with the same midrashic flair, we have this Alei Shor turn into the last moment before the redemption when the Jews are about to leave. Alei Shor and Moshe Rabbeinu is taking responsibility and doing something which I think we would all agree is something which is heroic. And then on the other hand, the exact same thing which Moshe created now causes the Chet HaEgel. So how could both of these sides be together? By the way, if you notice my title, Polytheism, Monotheism, B'nai Rachel, that's exactly the problem right there within Yosef himself. How can Yosef represent both of these things? So now we are going to primarily do a tour through the last third of Bereishit. And we're going to focus on Yosef. And the elements which exist, and I can absolutely assure you exist, which are there in the future, we will only note through Rashi or the Midrashic statements about them, but they're there. We get to source number 5. Yaakov is at the end of his life. Yosef comes in together with his sons. And remember that Yaakov makes these sons into tribes. Right? Ephraim and Manasseh, Keruvim, Shimon, Yuli. V'yar Yisroel, b'nei Yosef, yom mi'ele. Nonetheless, these people he's making tribes, who are they? Rashi here reports something which is very ominous. V'yar Yisroel, b'nei Yosef, b'kesh levarchem. He wanted to bless them. And the Shechina somehow left him. Now this is something which I think we're a little bit more familiar later on in Parshat Vayechi, when it says that he gathers them all together, I'm going to tell you what's going to take place at the end of days, and then suddenly he sort of shifts and talks about other things. So there again, Rashi brings what happened. He looked, and suddenly he lost his Shechina, he lost his Nevuah, and he spoke about other things. Over here he wants to bless the sons of Yosef, so this is a precursor to wanting to bless all the other sons. Why? Because Yaakov at that moment had a sense that idolaters are going to be coming out of these people. Which means, he looks at Yosef, looks at his children, sees the descendants, and what does he see? He sees Yeravam. Incidentally, what does Yeravam have to do with the golden calf? Right. So therefore, when we say, what in the world was Yosef doing with the golden calf? It's because golden calves aren't going to come out of Yosef. So this Alei Shor, we're blaming him for the first golden calf, because there are going to be other golden calves. And all that I'm pointing out now, if this sounds overly complicated, is that it's not. It's that for somehow, when certain people look at Yosef, they see these things that eventually will come out, which means if things come out later, there's some kind of core there as well. Is that clear at all what I'm saying now, or not? So Alei Shor could mean different things. The way it's using it is arise, shor arise, which means a shor, of course, is a fully grown calf. And Yosef is connected to shor. Ashur is a bull. So Yosef will be called Ashur later on when it comes to the bracha of Yosef. There's a similar phrase by Yaakov, which really means climbing the walls, which almost the same word, but leave that for now and for today. Vayomer mi'ele, Rashi continues, Mehechan yatsu ele, she'enu ru'i l'bracha. Where did these people come from? So over here, we have Yaakov discerning this complexity. He wants to bless Yosef, give him a double blessing, greater than all the other tribes, and at the same time, he looks and he sees this idolatry coming out. So let's go back a little bit before that. Back in source number 7.
Elo toldot Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvas Rishana. Hayaroe tafav batzon, vuhu narek b'nei bilhav b'nei zilpa, nishay aviv, v'yaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'a elavihim. Yosef, from the very beginning, is going to be chosen from his father. He's going to be the favorite. He's going to be given the coat of many colors. He's going to be coronated from his father. All the other boys work. He doesn't. He goes back to report. His father seems to be happy with the report. But the phrase over here that I want to focus on is "v'hu na'ar," because na'ar is an indication of being young, of almost childish behavior. Rashi, "v'hu na'ar," shu osem asen arut. He does things that young people would do. Mitakein b'sa'aro, mimashmish b'einav, kidei shenireh yafeh. He fixes his eyes, his hair. He wants to look very, very handsome, beautiful, and so on. Which means that what Rashi just now told us is that there is this sense of being self-absorbed within Yosef, and there is this sense of narcissism within Yosef, which of course is unfortunate, and Rashi is only at this point explaining it in terms of childish behavior. But it's one of the first things that we're introduced to when we're told about him. Later on, and this we refer to in the beginning, it's verse number 9, and here is again one of the complexities of Yosef. Everybody sees his greatness except for those who are closest to him. Those who are closest to him can't see it. Even if he's standing in front of them, they can't figure out who he is. Total blindness. Unless, of course, when they see him, they only see the negative traits which we're being told are there. Which means, again, you have over here a complex character. And when we look at this complex character, we see things which are positive. Or, when we see a complex character, we see things which are complex. Maybe that depends more upon us. Yaakov sees him and loves him, which means Yaakov sees him and, for the most part, completely ignores the negative. Although, suddenly struck towards the end of his life, who are these people? Because now he sees there's something negative over there. Most people around him, and again, you could just count along the way, immediately notice his greatness and put him in charge. Yaakov puts him in charge. Potiphar puts him in charge. Pharaoh puts him in charge. It's one of the reasons the brothers hate him, because they don't believe he should be in charge. The subtlety, and this is very important again, is that Yosef is ultimately never in charge. He's always the second in charge. He's the second behind Yaakov. He's the second behind Potiphar. He's the second behind Pharaoh. He's never number one, but he's the best number two there ever was. But does the best number two want to be number one, or are they satisfied with being number two? The background of the brothers hating Yosef is they think, you're going to lord over us? We're going to bow down to you? You're going to be the king? Which means what they see as the negative is him wanting to be number one. And what is it that Yosef actually wants? Answer, we don't know. Which means, is he satisfied with that position? Or did we ever imagine that he's sitting and he's planning and he's plotting to usurp the power of Pharaoh? Or you can just say pragmatically, that's too dangerous. On the other hand, Yosef is really smart. You think he couldn't have pulled off a coup if he wanted to? Did, just to think. Did Yosef ever imagine, just because he's in charge of Potiphar's house, that he can actually be in charge of everything and take everything as his own? And that you already know the answer to. Because that's the one thing which was tested. And that's the next source. Very convenient. Source 9. V'yazov kol shelo biyad Yosef lo yada itom umaki malechem asher ochel. Potiphar won the jackpot. He bought a slave, and turns out that this slave is so talented that this is not just a slave. This is somebody who can run his entire household, and he can then occupy himself with whatever it is that he likes to occupy himself. V'yosef yafei tor v'yafei mar'eh, which is really interesting, because it mentions again that Yosef is good-looking, which probably, I would have said, not probably, I would have said is probably an introduction to the next scene. Look what Rashi does to Yosef in source number 11, but don't leave the place in source number 9. In 11, Rashi writes, Yosef yifei Torah v'yifei Mareh, Kevin Sharatzar Moshel, Yitzchil Ochel v'shoter Masasel b'saro. Once he sees himself in charge, he starts to eat and to drink and to live the life of a wealthy person, and once again we go to his hair, and he starts to make himself look attractive and so on. Rashi, why did you do that to Yosef? This is very politically incorrect. Yosef is a victim of the Me Too movement. Right? How can you go and say that the victim, just because he looked nice, that's why he was okay to victimize him? Yes, you realize how politically incorrect this Rashi is? Of course, if it were a woman, it would be easier to convince people that it's politically incorrect. But it is. By the way, if you want to go along the same lines, Yaakov never wanted to marry Leah, and Yaakov was raped. Which are words that no one will ever say. But if it were the other way around, then people would say it. Leave that. We can leave the political correctness right now. But I'm not troubled by that. I'm troubled by something else. I'm troubled by why did Rashi do this to him? It says he's good-looking. Why would it say he's good-looking? What's the answer? Because he's good-looking. And look at what Rashi does to him. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avicha Mitabel, your father is mourning for you. But Tamis Sasel B'Sarecha, Ani Megarebacha Tadov. He goes, I'm gonna put her in heat right now, and she's going to come after you. Right? And you read this, and you say, what exactly did Yosef do? But again, Rashi over here feels this need to identify this other side of Yosef, the self-absorbed, the self-involved, the narcissistic, and so on, because Yosef is in charge. And again, in terms of Parshanut, for the whole last third of Bereishit, that's a really important Rashi, because your father's mourning, and why aren't you doing anything about it? I know everybody always connects that with the Ramban, or for that matter today with Rav Yoel ben Nun, but that Rashi is actually a very important Rashi. Because saying, Yosef, what are you doing? But if we go back to the text in source number 9, Pasuk Zayin, V'yachad Rama'il v'tisat Eshet Adonav v'tina el Yosef, his master's wife sees him, V'toma shafayimi, and she says, lie with me. V'yima'in, and those of you who unfortunately were never taught the trup, on top of the aleph there is a shel shelet, which is very, very slow, which means the trup seems to indicate some kind of a hesitation on his part, some kind of inner turmoil taking place, and not something which is... And by the way, this doesn't make him worse in our eyes. Quite the opposite is true. Because his inner turmoil, v'yema'in, v'yomar eshet adonav, hin adoni lo yodaiti ma bebayit, v'kol asher yesh lo natan biyadi, I've been trusted by your husband. There's nobody here who has more a greater status than me. He hasn't held anything back except for you. Because you are his wife. Which is Yosef's giving a moral speech. This is not right. I've been entrusted. I've been given trust. I want to live up to what I've been asked to do. And then he adds a second thing, which is somewhat, I won't say unique, because there was a turn of phrase by Avraham, which may have been unfortunate the way that he said it, the Eichesa Hara'a Hagdola Hazot, the Chatati Lelokim. And how can I do this? Because it would be a sin against God. Do you realize how delicious that is? Tell a pagan in heat that you fear God. What is that's not for her. That's him. This is Yosef's inner world. Yosef's inner world is that he passionately believes in God, he passionately believes in decency, and he also knows his place and does not want to replace his boss, which tells us something about Yosef, but that doesn't mean that other people don't think that they can, you know, get him to go to one step further, that he can replace Potiphar. But Yosef, here we're told, tells her it's morally wrong, and tells her it's ethically wrong, and tells her that it's religiously wrong. Yosef does something very similar afterwards. If you notice, I would say it like this. Yosef speaks of God more than anyone else in Sefer Bereishit. Probably Yosef mentions God more than every other character in Bereishit combined. I didn't count. But take a look. Yosef is taken out of prison and brought to Paro. And it's told to Paro, here's a man who knows how to interpret dreams. What would be the best way for Yosef to present himself? Absolutely, I know how to interpret dreams. That's my skill. You need me. But what does he do? And again, he's talking to a man who thinks he's a god. He's talking to a polytheist. V'yan Yosef et Paro, source 10, Lemor, biladi Elokim yaneh et shlom haparo. With, right, only God can say such things. And the next, he does it again. V'yom Yosef el Paro, hachalom Paro, chadu et asher Elokim osei gid l'paro. What God is doing reveals to Paro. Again, pasuk kafchet. Hu devar shedibarti parosher, Elokim osei Paro. God has revealed himself to Paro. Lamed bet, v'lashonot hachalom al Paro panayim, ki nachon devar mi'im Elokim, mor Elokim lasot. Yosef speaks about God. I mean, he's a Baruch Hashem Jew, Baruch Hashem, Emirat Hashem, right? And so he's saying this in Erechas, right? He says this in every single line. And do you realize how successful he is? If you look at Pasuk Lamed Chet, when Paro finally realizes Yosef's skill and appoints him, but you want Paro Elavadav, and it's like, Isha Sharuch Elokim Bo? Is there anyone else that we know who has the Spirit of God within him? They never heard of God before. But he's the one who has the Spirit of God more than anyone else. Yosef's brothers, they heard his dreams. Now you remember, Paro will later hear his dreams. Oh, the Spirit of God is within him. Yosef tells his dreams to his brothers. What happens when they meet up with him? Source 12. V'yomu isha l'chiv, hinei bala chamota l'zeba, v'ta l'chu v'nargehu, v'nashlichehu b'chad ha'borot, v'amarnu chayera achlatu, v'nirmayu achal l'motav. Let's kill him. The dreamer is here. We'll kill him. And then we'll see what will be of their dreams, of his dreams. Which means Yosef's brothers don't hear the Spirit of God within him. They don't hear that God is speaking through Yosef. They don't hear that there's any possibility that any of this is true. And just in case you're not clear about this, when they say we're going to kill him, it's because of the dreams. So again, when you realize this disconnect between the way that some people see Yosef and the way that other people see Yosef, it really is incredible. Which means this negative side that we only saw Yaakov see at the end, the negative side that we saw somehow appearing at the Cheder Egel, the negative side is what his brothers exclusively see about him, while the positive side is seen by his father, is seen by Paro, is seen by Potiphar, is seen by, also, by the way, the guy who's in charge of the prison. Everyone sees this positive side, but again, those closest to him consistently see this other side, and they want to kill him for it. Source 13. And this is also remarkable. V'yosef hu ha-shalit al ha-aretz, hu ha-mashbir l'kol ha-aretz, v'yavo achei yosef yishtachavu lo apayim arza, Vayar Yosef et achav vayakirem. Yosef's brothers, they arrive. Yosef is in charge of all of Egypt. Vayar Yosef et achav vayakirem. Yosef sees them and he recognizes them. Vitnakel leim vidaber itam kashot. Vayomer leim me'ayin batam. So let's pause here a little bit. Okay, Yosef's at an advantage. The brothers are at a disadvantage. Because Yosef has known that his brothers will be coming from the day that he stood in front of Paro. Yes? Yes. How did he know this? Because he knew that there is going to be food in Egypt, and there will be a famine all over the Middle East. And he collects food, and he opens up the storehouses for people to come. So he knows that the day will come, they will come from the land of Canaan as well. Which means Yosef is sitting and waiting. And by the way, Yosef is always 2, 3, 4, 5 steps ahead of the people that he's talking to. Especially when he's talking to his brothers. If you want to start off from the day that he has his dreams, Will we bow down to you? What's the answer? Yeah, you will. Will you lord over us? What's the answer? Yeah, you will. But they can't see it, and it's not possible. So Yosef's at the advantage. He knows his brothers are coming. I also do not believe that he's caught off guard.
And this is why we have to be very careful with what he says and when he says it, because he asks them one question. I don't know how many of you have been under investigation, brought into the police, or for that matter have been lawyers, and giving advice to your clients. Yosef asked a question. What was the question he asked? Where have you come from? Where are you from? What is the answer that they gave? They said, Vayomu me'eretz Kanaan lishbar ochel. They said, we came from the land of Canaan to buy food. Why was that an ill-advised answer? Because it was not what they were asked. They were asked, where are you from? What's the answer? Canaan. That's all. We came from Canaan to buy food. Of course you came from Canaan to buy food. That's why you're in a food line. Sometimes people talk too much. Right? Either plead the fifth or answer exactly what you were told. Don't speak too much. But they constantly do this, by the way. And Yosef jumps on this because they have to give an excuse why they're there to buy food. And Yosef says something, which the truth is, it's heartbreaking. He really knows who they are, and they really don't know who they are. And that also has to, you know, at some point, you have to be concerned with that. Why is it that they never figure out that it's Yosef? Who in the world would want to treat them so badly? Who in the world will keep asking them about their father? Who in the world is concerned about their younger brother? Right? Isn't it? I know I read the book every year, so it's obvious to me, but why is it obvious to them? Do you realize the things that Yosef does to them? I mean, he really is a passive aggressive. Do you realize what he does to them? They come, and he's going to throw them all into, it's called a pit. He throws them all into a pit. Wow, that's an interesting image, right? Then he leaves one behind and tells all the others to go. That's real interesting. And then what does he do? Why does he put money in their bags? Because once before they left their brother behind and they preferred money over their brother. So he puts money in their bags and says, now go home with the money. Okay, you lost your brother, but go home with your money. I'm going to say it again. Yosef is such a passive aggressive that everything he's doing is in order to, he's screaming at them, hi, I'm Yosef, can't you see? But what's the answer? Of course they can't see. Why can't they see? Because that's impossible. Because Yosef is a loser, and Yosef is self-absorbed, and Yosef is a narcissist, and Yosef can't ever accomplish anything. And Yosef, listen to what he says to them, because it really is interesting. He says, you're spies, and you came. He says, you're spies. And then what do they say? No, we're not spies. We came to get food. And he says, V'yizkor Yosef et hachalmot asher chalam lahem. He remembered the dreams. V'yomer lehem meraglim atem. Lerot et erev at haaretz batem. V'yomer elav. They said, lo adoni. V'avadech habo lishbar ochel. We only came to buy food. Okay. Kulanu b'nei ish echad nachnu. We are all sons of one man. Kenim nachnu. We're honest people. By the way, this is the wrong person to say that to. We're upstanding, honest people. Lo yuvdech meraglim. We're not spies. Vayomer lo ki erva ta'aretz batim lerot. He goes, no, I know you. You came looking in the seedy parts of town. Erva ta'aretz, the red light district. You're looking for something. Vayomru, and they say, shneim asar avadech. By the way, they later lie and deny this to their father that they ever said this. We are 12 sons. Achim anachnu, b'nei ishachad b'eretz kanan. But now there's a problem, because 10 are there. The youngest is with their father. The echad, einenu. Now, if you're Yosef, how are you taking that part? Echad einenu. Right? He no longer is. What do you mean he no longer is? He's no longer alive, or he's no longer part of the family? See, what's Yosef's fantasy? We all have fantasies. What's Yosef's fantasy? That his brothers are going to be forced to come down to Egypt. Yosef was sent down to Egypt. His brothers know that Yosef is in Egypt. They don't know that he's alive, but they know that he was sold as a slave. Yosef is good looking. Yosef is self-absorbed. He's a pretty boy. So what would happen to someone like that? He'd end up in the red light district. So what does Yosef say to them? Have you been looking for him? You're spies. You've been looking for something. And they say, no. We're not looking for anything. They go, no, you've been looking for something. And they go, no, nothing. And they say, and one no longer isn't. Have any of you ever noticed Yosef's answer to that? Yosef, who asher dibarti aleichem le'im amaraglim atem.
He's the one I was talking about when I said you were spies. Yosef is begging them to say, we're looking for Yosef. Incidentally, had they said we're looking for Yosef, the whole story would have ended right there. I know you never noticed that pasuk before. They just added this week. The disconnect is unbelievable. Because Yosef is saying, you have another brother. He's reminding them of this one, Einenu. And you're looking for him. No, we're not. He wants to say, you're staring at him in the face. I'll tell you again, I get to make all of this up. Had they said right then, yes, we have another brother and we got into whatever and we're looking for him, that's all we want is to bring our brother home, he would have said, I need Yosef right then. Whole story ends differently. But they can't say it. Why can't they say it? Because it's not true. They're honest people. They're not looking for him. And even when they're staring him in the face, and this is the tragedy, they cannot possibly recognize that this is him. It can't be him, because Yosef is a loser. It's not possible. Again, even, you know, there's a midrash later when he admits, I'm Yosef. And they say, sorry, Yosef is in the room. Where is he? Right? This can't be Yosef. Let's continue. I want to get back to our polytheism and monotheism issue before you accuse me of forgetting where we are. One thing I want to insist with Yosef is that every single step along the way here has been thought through. There's a reason for it. Symbolism, statement, message. Whether they get it or not is a whole other thing. Once again, pit, money, bags, so on. They all come back, and what happens when they come back? And they have to get food, and they come back down with Binyamin. And they come in, and they say, listen, someone made a mistake, and the money came up in our bags. So what are they told? Oh no, your God has blessed you. Again, Yosef as a ventriloquist is talking about God to them. You know, your God has blessed you, and that's why you have this. They sit around and they have their meal and they sit in order and all of that. And then we get to source 14. Yitzavet asher al beito lemor maleit am tachot anashim ochel kasher yuchlun v'seit v'sim kesef ish b'fi am tachto v'et gvi'i ha'kesef tasim b'fi am tachat ha'katon v'et kesef shivru v'ya'as kedvar Yosef asher diber. So he says, pack up all their bags and put all their money back in their bags and then put the cup in the youngest one. So what is Yosef trying to accomplish right now? Because it's not immediately clear. And when we realize what it really is, I think and I hope it will be very interesting. Habokor, or the morning dawns, when Ashim shulchu heima v'chamrayim, and they were sent off. Heim yotzu et ha'ir, they left the city, lo rechiku, and they didn't get all that far. Yosef Amar Lasharo Beto, Kumudov Acharei Ha'anashim, go chase them down, Visag them, catch up to them, Vamar Tamalayim, and say to them, Lamashilam Timratacha Tova. Again, why are you not decent people? Why do you repay good with bad? What is the matter with you people? Alozesha Yishte Adunibo, Uhu Nachesh Yinacheshbo. The cup that he drinks with, what is this phrase, Nachesh Yinachesh? What is Nichush? Sorcery. Do you realize what Yosef just now did? Yosef has known so much, and he's always been a step ahead. And now his cup is missing. So what did he just now tell the guy in charge of his household to say to them, why did you steal his cup? And of course, they didn't steal the cup. At least not knowingly did they steal the cup. But why did you take the thing that he uses for sorcery? Which again will lead us back to Nichush, lead us back to the world of idolatry. Why is Yosef introducing this? Anyone? What's he doing? So I'll tell you exactly what he's doing. And without the Nachashi Nachesh, you really don't get the full extent of what he's doing. Years before this, the brothers went through at the time what was the most traumatic moment of their lives. What was that? That was when they ran away and left their home. It was the only home they ever knew. It was the home of Laban. And they go, they sneak off, right, with their father, with their various mothers, this whole clan, they all sneak off. Laban finds out about this. Laban goes chasing them down. And Laban is extremely upset. And Laban then stops them and makes them unpack their bags because he's looking for something. This scene of their now being stopped as they leave and having their bags gone through. Any of you ever get stopped at customs? Well, maybe on the way back, we'll see. No. No. Many times. Okay. It could be quite traumatic. It's traumatic in a country which is even your country. It's traumatic in a place of peace. It's even worse when you're dealing with somebody who may very well kill you. The brothers experienced this, and I'll say it again, the most traumatic moment of their lives. Yosef is now forcing them to relive. The same way that he forced them to relive the moment of Yosef being put in the pit, and reliving having the money in their bags when they leave, and leaving a brother behind, he's now taking them back to another step where they were stopped and all their things were gone through. But there's another point. Who was actually guilty in that case? Rachel. Now, why did she take the trophim? So now, stop. You all have been indoctrinated by Rashi. And it's a good thing. And Rashi told you the reason she took it was to try to be makariv her father, as it were, in order to separate him from idolatry. Why? Because her father was an idolater. And this is the best way. Incidentally, there's many other things she could have done with them. She could have taken them, she could have broken them, she could have thrown them away, she could have put them someplace, she could have buried them someplace. But she took them. So your minds now are working, and you'll say, well, she didn't have time, and she wasn't sure, and there, and you'll tell me all kinds of things. But I prefer, so therefore, if you look at 14 and compare it to 15, 15 is the scene where Vatignov Rachel et Trofim Asher Aviyah, she takes them. And we're not going to read the whole source, but what we will read is 16 is the Rashbam's take on it. So I know the Rashbam, just like all of you, when he was young, he learned Chumash and Rashi. Okay, good. You appreciate that. Okay, he learned Chumash with Rashi, if that makes it any better. Rashbam doesn't go for what Rashi told him. Rather, he writes, Vatignov Rachel et Trofim, Shelo yagidu v'yodiu l'lavan, ki rotze Yaakov l'vroach. I hope you appreciate what I just now read. She stole them so that the Trofim won't tell Lavan where they went, which way they went. Which means the Rashbam is reading it that Rachel actually believed that these Trofim work. Don't ask me anything else. The Rashbam was an Orthodox rabbi. And he says, like, and he quotes other places around, that ki inyan shenamar ein ephod utrafim, ki atrafim divru avin, and so on. Rigilim ayu luksom behem. They did kesem with them. People use these things. It was a world which used magic and incantations and so on, which means, remember, we started with Sheol and trying to get rid of idolatry, but on the other hand, using idolatry. Did you ever suspect that that may have gone all the way back to Rachel? Bnei Rachel, right? That Rachel herself may have wanted to take away from her. Maybe both statements are true. She wants to take away from her father, but she's got this thing in her hands, and she realizes that her father can use this also. So it's also to protect, but not just because it doesn't work. And it's far more complex than we ever imagined it before. So, let's now continue. And we have our last part of Bereishit to get to now. Source 17. When the story is all over, Yosef finally admits who he is. Vayomi Yosef el Achiv, source 17. Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. V'hein, sorry. V'lo yuchlu echav lanot oto ki nevalu mipanav. And they couldn't answer. Now, there's a lot to say about those three words, ha'od avichai. The first thing I want you to remember is with Yosef, nothing is accidental. He's thought about this moment for a very long time. He knew how he was going to reveal himself to his brothers. It could be, and this is something which you read the Sforno, maybe you'll see it, maybe not. I think yes. That when Yehuda gives his whole impassioned plea, what are you doing? You took away the son that he loved, and you're trying to kill my father, and if you take away the son that he loves, he's going to die. So Yosef turns around and says, hi, I'm Yosef. Is my father still alive? Like, you're blaming me for taking away the son that he loved? This is what you've done. And if that's the case, it is the most cynical statement in all the Sefer Bereishit. You've been accusing me of doing the thing that you've done. And at that point, they can't say anything. But what I really want to get to is, what's Yosef's larger, what's the end game? Is the end game reconciliation? Is the end game becoming a family? Is the end game becoming brothers again? Is that the end game? Is he going to become a son again? Is he going to become a brother again? Both of these are important, because Yosef at first only says one thing, and he could have said it differently. He says, Ha'od Avi. There was a different word he could have used instead of Avi. Right. Od Avinu Chai, right? I think Shlomo Kabach changed the words here. Yes? Right. Od Avinu Chai. Ha'od Avi Chai. Is there any difference between those two? Yeah. One is my father. What have you done to my father? One is, what have you done to our father? Because if you want to have a reconciliation, then you speak a little differently than Yosef did. And what we're about to see now is, even though Yosef makes up, and even though he does not kill them, things don't end, or at least don't seem that they end, the way that Hollywood would have scripted it. Source 18, which 18, sorry, 17, 18, 19, they just all come one after the other, but I broke it up, the English would be a little easier. So, 18. Vayom Yosef el Achav. Again, these are his brothers. He speaks, Shuna Eli, Vigoshu, come close to me. So again, this sounds like the reconciliation we're waiting for. Vayomer, Ni Yosef Achichem. Okay, finally, I'm Yosef, your brothers. Asher Machartim Oti Mitzrayimah. And you, the ones who you sold. Now, I know that also some of you fall for that other Rashbam, right? Oh, the brothers never sold Yosef. Of course they sold Yosef. You know how I know they sold Yosef? Because Yosef said they sold Yosef. By the way, you know how I know that the Rashbam's pshat is right in Bereishit regarding the meaning of the trafim? Is because he put the cup and said, this is what I use for magic. When he's replicating the story, he's putting magic in the story. He's giving them an excuse of how he knows the future. And essentially, again, if I didn't make that point clear enough, essentially what he's doing is he's saying, oh, this guy you thought was Yosef, it all comes from black magic. That's where all the power comes from. Which again gets us back towards this problem in terms of polytheism. The other thing that he's doing is, he is bringing back in their minds that this terrible person who's caused all the problems in their lives is actually Rachel. Get rid of Rachel, get rid of one kid, get rid of the other kid, because Binyamin stole this. Binyamin is just like his brother, right? Terrible person, just like a mother, terrible person. It's basically, we come from a good family, except for this side of the family. Rachel acted this way, Binyamin acted like that. By the way, that point, the Midrash actually identifies. It says that he tried to plant to their minds that he is a Ganav ben Ganav. Just like Rachel stole it, Binyamin stole it. But what is that doing? It's paving the way of just walking away from him once and for all. But I'm saying, once you notice this Rashbam, it's deeper. It's not just that he's a Ganav. There is this element of polytheism, which is in the whole story as well, going all the way back to Rachel. And for us, that should be a little bit scary. And Yosef knows this, so when he's replicating the story, he replicates it with his magic cup, which can tell the future, which therefore is supposed to parallel the trafim which were taken. Did that make any sense? Because that's Yosef's same shot on the Chumash. Yosef's same shot on the Chumash, yes, I'm helping him a little bit. But Yosef is saying Pshat on the Chumash by using the magic cup to replace, or in the place of the Trafim. So, Yosef tries to make up. The way he has set them up till this point is, Rachel's bad, Binyamin's bad, Yosef's bad. Now, the reconciliation, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? And then he says, but don't worry that you sold me. So how should you follow that up? Source 19. Vata al te'atzvu. Don't feel bad. I have to pause for a second before I read the rest of this. Yosef coming down to Egypt, in his mind, is it a good thing or a bad thing? You know why Yosef is so successful? Because he's a really long-term thinker. He's the one who easily comes up with a 14-year plan. When Yosef, you know, you're going to bow down to me, that's long term. It happens. Yosef is somebody who rules Egypt for more years than probably anybody ever ruled anything. He stood in front of Paro at what age? At the age of 30. Yes, am I wrong about this? There were 7 good years, 2 bad years. He's 39 years old now when he meets his brothers, but he rules Egypt from the age of 30 to the age of 110. So now, as far as Yosef is concerned, I know this may sound a little twisted. Is the sale of Yosef a good thing or a bad thing? I know this is twisted thinking. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? It's the thing which allowed all of his dreams to come true. It's the thing which facilitated him becoming in charge of Egypt. It's the thing which revealed the greatness that his brothers had never seen. And with that in mind, let's read source 19. Mem hei hei. Va'ata al te'atzvu va'al yichar b'neichem ki machartim otihena. Again, second time he says, don't feel bad, you sold me. Why? Because they sold him. Ki lamichya shalachani elokim lefneichem. And now he goes back and he brings God into the picture. God did this to save us. Actually, he didn't use the word us. Lamichya. Life. Two of the seven bad years. And God sent me. So he's doing something interesting. He's saying, you didn't even do this. This was God that did this. This was destiny. God is involved in history and God sent me here. Which means if selling Yosef was a good thing, he should say, I know you had a wrong intention, but look, you know, how well this all worked out. But no, all this worked out well because it's God, which is all the credit goes to God, and all you can say, that's fine. But this is not necessarily the way that you have an attempted reconciliation. You don't say that, look at all the bad things that you did, and anything that good came out of this is because God was involved in this, but you guys, you know, thank you, but no thank you. V'atalo atem shalachani iti, hinei ki elokim, v'yasimenu la'av l'paro, lodon l'kol be'et. God is the one who has placed me in charge. Source number 20, he is an advisor of Paro. It goes back to Avrech and what the phrase means. Source 20, Maru, hurry up, valu el Avi. Notice what happened again here. El Avi. What could Avi had said if he really wanted to make up? And now you notice, Yosef doesn't do that. El Avi. But Martim elav koamar bincha Yosef, your son Yosef, as if to say, your only real son, Yosef. Remember I told you he's a passive aggressive? Koamar bincha Yosef samani elokim la'adon l'kol Mitzrayim. Notice again how often Yosef speaks of God. God is all over his language. Yosef lives with real God consciousness. Which again, I want to remind you, at the very beginning what we saw, that Yosef is both the source for polytheism and monotheism. That we see something negative, we see something positive. There's nobody who speaks about God as much as Yosef. It's all the time he speaks of God. Rida elai al tamod. V'yashav teberetz goshen v'hayiti karov elai. Ata uvanecha uvnei banecha. Tell my father that he should come down and you'll live near me and I'll take care of you and your children. Yeah, you notice a word is missing there. My brothers. No, it's Yaakov, you and your children. Your son Yosef, you and your children. Yeah, is this only me who's noticing this, or is this speech? Again, Yosef has thought this out, but this is what Yosef thinks. V'tzimcha v'korcha v'kol asher lach. V'kikalti otcha shem ki ot chameshon in rav, and so on. V'gadetim la'avi et kvodi b'mitzrayim v'et kol asher re'itim ahartim aradetim et avi heina. So now you notice he used the word Avi at least five times in this narrative, and always Avi, never Avinu. Bring down everything which is yours. So the brothers just become this thing on the side. And I want to add another thing. Yosef is going to take care of them in terms of their needs, in terms of their food, in terms of their clothing, in terms of their jobs. He's going to take care of everything. If you're the brothers, how do you feel? Or do I need to explain this much, much more? What's the highest level of tzedakah? Let's start that way. You all know the answer. What's the answer? Giving somebody a job. What if you don't give somebody a job, but you give them everything? So that's good, but it's not as good. Why is it not as good? Is that one makes somebody independent and one keeps somebody dependent. Now, if you're dependent, everything's taken care of, it's good. But I think that this is the core, the key of... How should we put this? The key of tzedakah is dignity. Every single human being has a right to their dignity. And the more dignity you give somebody, the more dignity they retain, the higher level of tzedakah it is. So therefore, if they have to ask you and you give them, you know, face to face, so it's a lower level. If they don't know who it came from, it's a higher level. If you don't even know who you gave it to, then it's a higher level because
again, there is no there's no feeling of an uneasiness.
But if you take somebody and say, listen, I really need you. I need you to work for me because I think that you are of value, and that person can then work and have their own job, there's far more dignity involved in this. So what does Yosef say to his brothers? I'm in charge. I'll take care of you. And, you know, you'll have food, you'll have clothing, you'll have homes. Now, for a lot of you, you would say, well, that sounds really good. Yes, retirement is good. If my sister listens to this later, I talked to her on Friday, wished her happy birthday, and she told me that she's taking her pension at the end of the month. And I said, so they'll pay you not to come to work? And she said, yeah. So I said, that sounds good. At certainly a certain stage in life, it sounds like a wonderful thing. You don't have to do anything, we'll give you money. But nonetheless, for someone to say that I need you, and you have something of value to offer, you could be somebody who can contribute something, especially if it's true. It gives a person far more dignity. Do you realize what Yosef is actually doing when he says to them that I'll take care of you, and I'll give you food, and I'll give you jobs, not jobs, I'll give you clothing, I'll give you foods, I'll give you homes. What is Yosef actually doing to them? Making them dependent, but he's doing something else. He's making his dream come true. Remember there were two dreams? One dream was they'll all bow down. Another dream was that their sheaves will down to his sheaves. That's economics. Now they have to bow down to him in order to get the sheaves, in order to get the food. He will take care of them. Which means it's worse than you thought. Because what do they say? Are we going to bow down to you? Are you going to be in charge of us? And what is Yosef now creating the situation without any negotiation? I am in charge and you will bow down to me for your food. This is not a relationship of equals. One way of reconciliation is to say we're all brothers. But remember when the brothers had their chance to say that? We're 12 sons of one man, Avala Harinenu. Right? Forget about him. He's not part of us. Now, I'm not saying Yosef is taking revenge. It's worse than that. Yosef is making the dreams come true. And therefore, we don't have equality here because this is manifest destiny. This is God's will. This is what God created. God created the situation that I'm in charge. So we hear all of this, and am I correct in assuming that none of you ever read Yosef's speech when he makes up with his brothers as being so bad? Am I correct about this? Okay. It's really bad. And this is not my... Yes, this is my read into it, but it's there. I'm not reading anything which isn't there. It's there. Bring everything, but nonetheless, I am taking care of you. Which means Yosef could have walked in as we're brothers and so on, but he can't even say we're brothers. He doesn't say we're brothers. He doesn't even say we have the same father, as it were. Avi, my father. So I'm going to say it again, that there is this part of Yosef that maybe you never suspected is here very, very loud and clear. And then let's see what happens. I do want to point something else out. Did Yaakov love Yosef more than all the other brothers? It never said that in the Chumash. I know you think it said that. It never said that. What did it actually say? It didn't use the name Yaakov. He used the name Yisrael. Ela told it Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvaz Rishna, right? But then he continues, V'Yisrael Ahav, Yosef Mikol Echav. Does it strike you as making any difference at that point, talking about Yaakov and shifting to Yisrael? It could very well be that it wasn't Yaakov who loved him the most. And there's every reason to think that he did. And it says actually he loved him. Why? Ki ben Zakunim. Why? Because he was a ben Zakunim. Which we would normally translate as, oh, he was his youngest son, but he's not. He has a younger son, Binyamin. He has a couple of other brothers who are pretty much the same age as him. Ben Zakunim is not the right phrase. Targum Onkelo says Ben Zakunim means the wise son, right? Ben Hakim, the wise son. That means Yisrael loved Yosef because he was so talented, which is not the same thing as Yaakov loved him because he's the only son that he ever wanted, because he's the only wife that he ever wanted. But you realize how, of course, the brothers would have read this. The brothers read it, oh, he loved Rachel, he loves Yosef, without ever looking at the capability that Yosef has. The reason why I'm bringing that up is the shift in source 24, when he's going down, Vayisa Yisroel v'chol asher lo, v'yavo be'er Hashem, v'yivizvach zachim, v'lohei aviv Yitzchak, v'yom alokim li Yisroel, v'mar talayla, v'yom Yaakov. I'm not going to get too far into this, but as Yaakov goes down to Egypt, there is this wonderful interplay between the Yisrael and the Yaakov, which was there at the very beginning as well, of the Eilat Toldot Yaakov, but Yisrael loves Yosef. There is Yisrael, which always seems to me to be an issue of the national identity, versus Yaakov being the individual. So you have the individual versus the national. Here's the story of the individual Yaakov, but the Yaakov who is the father of a nation loves Yosef. And over here as well, it's Yisrael is going down because this is part of destiny. It's time to go down to Egypt. This is part of the promise, as it were, that was made to Avram. Let's move on. Oh, source 25 actually quoted that. Okay, good. Yisrael Ahavet Yosef. Excellent. How did Yosef's speech go? I mean, did it work? Did the brothers now love him? Or not necessarily? No, the brothers were terrified of him. The brothers thought that he was an evil person. The brothers thought that he was going to kill them. And how do I know that? Look at source 26. V'yashav Yosef Mitzrayim ahu v'echav v'chol alimito l'kvarit aviv v'achorek v'rut aviv. And now they come back to Egypt after the father has died and he blessed them all and so on. V'yiruchay Yosef kimeit aviv v'yomu l'yus tamein Yosef. And now they see the father is dead and the Yosef is going to hate us. V'ashiv yashiv et kol arashir gamal no'oto. So how many years was this? Yaakov lived there 17 years. Right? 17 years have gone by. Yosef has given them 3 meals a day. Yosef has given them a place to live. Yosef's taken care of them. And what has built up this whole time? Total fear, because they're convinced the day Yaakov dies, that he's going to kill them. So I'll ask you again. So how did the reconciliation work out? Answer, well, probably exactly what Yosef wanted it to. As far as the brothers are concerned, who's Yosef? Totally self-centered. All that he cares about is himself. Totally self-absorbed. But again, you realize how sad this is. This is from the very beginning of the story to the very end of the story. Nothing's changed. Only thing which has changed is that, okay, so Yosef had a good day. I mean, he got lucky. Maybe even he's great, but he's not great. And I hope that made some sense. And look what happens here. And they say he's going to kill us. But Yitzavu Yosef Lemor, and this took a lot of guts. They commanded him and said, Avicha Tzivo Lefnei Moto Lemor. And the rabbis and Chazal are not clear if this was true or not. Kon terbun Yosef, that Yaakov said before he died, tell Yosef, Ana son nefesh achech v'chatan, please forgive your brothers for the sins, the terrible things they did to you. Ki ragm lucha, right, all the bad they did to you. V'ata son nefesh avdei elokei avicha, v'yef ki Yosef v'debram ilav. And Yosef cried. V'yichuk kol echav yiplu lefanav yu einenu l'cha levadim. So after everything, okay, we'll be slaves. Just don't kill us. And Yosef doesn't back down at all. But Yomer Leim Yosef, Al Tiruki Atachid Al Kimani, a mind instead of God. V'atem Chashavta Alei Ra. I know it's true you want to do terrible things to me. Elokim Chashva L'Tova. This was great, everything that happened. But he's not saying you did something great. You did something terrible. But God turned something good. L'mana Seke Yom Ezel Chiyot Amrav. V'ata Al Tiro Anochi Achal Kel Etchem Ve'etapchem V'nechem Otam V'deber Alibam. And what does Yosef say? That the relationship will remain exactly the way that it is. I am in charge. I will take care of you. Right? Let's not make any mistakes. The dreams will come true. I want to share with you one teaching of Chazal, and then we have to get towards an end of the book. And I know that you want a happy ending. Source 22 is a very rich source, and it combines a lot of the themes. It's a Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin. He comforted them and he spoke to their hearts that he wouldn't do anything bad to them. But sincerely, but the relationship was still going to be an unequal relationship. There's not going to be equality, which means it's not that they're all brothers, it's going to be Yosef's in charge and they bow down to him. And that's the way it's going to continue. I'm not going to kill you, I'm not going to make you slaves. I'll take care of you. Which means the punishment, don't you realize how incredible this is? They're saying, you know, okay, maybe kill us and make us slaves. And he's saying, no, I'm going to take care of you. Why? The dream has to come true. This is God's wish. This is what God wanted. Okay. Source 22, a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Achar hadavar hazeh lo shav Yeravam miderko hara'ah. So now we're back to Yeravam. We met him in the very beginning. Yeravam is the one who links us between a lot of the elements over here. Why? Because Yeravam is the one who is a descendant of Yosef, who actually was guilty of making a golden calf and building a couple golden calves and building his own temples as some place which opposes the temple in Jerusalem, which of course is built on the place of Binyamin, which is the other son of Yosef. Here we have the monotheism and the polytheism, represented by the place which is Binyamin and the place now which is going to be from Yeravam, from Ephraim. So, Achara Devar Zeh Lo Shav Yerah Mider Korah. So the verse says, he does not move away from his terrible deeds, his terrible path. The Gemara then questions, my achar, what does it mean after? Like, what happened? I'm a Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba says, let me tell you an incredible scene that he imagines or did take place in the Garden of Eden. Acha shetafsu HaKadosh Baruch Hu liyiravim bivigdo. After he grabbed him by the clothing. Who else did we ever see the same phrase being used, grabbed him by the clothing? That was Yosef, when Potiphar's wife grabs him by the clothing. You also realize the word bivigdo can have one of two meanings. Beged could, of course, mean clothing, and it could also mean bigida, what would be a betrayal, treachery, betrayal. So even when Yosef goes into the house, it's not all that clear in Machloket, in the Gemara, did he go in deliberately to sin, or did he go in deliberately and complete innocence? So one says he goes into sin, and she grabs him by the clothing, she grabs him by his betrayal, which almost was manifest, but at the end, I'm saying it's even more impressive that Yosef then is judged. He acts in this moral way, this ethical way. God is in this. I can't do this. The sin against God, the sin against her husband. So all of that is there. And now we have the same sin. It's the same scene, but now it's the scene of this descendant of Yosef, this descendant that Yaakov sees when he's looking at Ephraim and Asher. Who are these people? So I'll say it again. Which part of Yosef do you see? Now Yeravam is there, grabbed by the clothing. Again, the same phrase being used. But Amar Lo, and God says, Chazor Becha. God says, what does Chazor Becha mean? Literally. Come back. Turn around. Do tshuva. Va'ani va'ata uven Yishai netayel b'gan Eden. I don't know if there was ever a greater offer. Ani va'ata, God says, I and you and Ben Yishai, Mashiach, we'll all take a stroll in the Garden of Eden. Amar La Yeravam says, Mi Barosh, who's first? What kind of chutzpah is that? First of all, God is there. Who's first? So what does God answer? Amar Lo Ben Yishai Barosh. Ben Yishai is first. Mihachi Lo Be'ina. Yeravam says, is that the case? No, thank you. That's an incredible, incredible teaching. Because what this Gemara is really doing, it's telling us what's so bad about the descendants of Yosef, who cling to idolatry, make a golden calf or two, because they want to be in charge. And now you can tell me, but hold it, we saw this in the last, this was the Yosef that we just now met. This was the Yosef that his brothers always saw. This was the Yosef that they hated and wanted to get rid of. He's in charge, and his brothers are not needed, his brothers are not there. Which leads me then to literally the final scene. And I use literally, not like all my students use it, which is completely wrong in every sentence, but this is literally the end of Sefer Bereishit. Source number 27. V'yomi Yosef el Echav, Anochi Mit. Yosef says to his brothers, I'm going to die. V'lokim pakod yivkod etchem. Again, always God. Someone's going to count up for me how many times he actually uses God in his language. And God is going to remember you. God is going to redeem you. So remember, the redemption is not going to take place until Yosef. Well, here's where it's from. V'letchem in ha'aretz. And he's going to take you out. El ha'aretz is out. El ha'aretz shenishba alav ha'mitzvah kol Yaakov. And he's going to bring you out to the land which was promised to Avin Yitzchak Yaakov. V'yishba Yosef et b'nei Yisrael le'mar. And Yosef makes a vow with the rest of the Jewish people. Pakod yufkod elokim etchem. V'leitem et atzmotayim yizem. That God is going to remember you and take my remains out. And the book ends, Vayamat Yosef ben Me'aves Sef Shanim Liyachantu Oto B'Yisem Ba'aron B'Mitzrayim. The Yosef is left in Egypt. And that's how the book ends. But as far as I'm concerned, there's something else happened over here, which was absolutely revolutionary, and one could not have predicted it throughout the whole last third of the book of Bereishit. His last breath, he says to his brothers and his family, it's not I and then all of you below, and I take care of all of you. Yosef finally says to them, I need you. He never said that to them before. I need you. The moment that Yosef says, I need you, he turned them into brothers again. He gave them the dignity. I'm not going to live forever. I need somebody to take me out. See, I can say it on a moral level, and that's where I started. Of course they have to take him out because they kidnapped him. So on a moral level, of course you have to return him to the land of Israel. That's the right thing to do. And they take him back to Shechem from the very place they kidnapped him from. And Yosef is buried in Shechem for that reason. But these verses are so much more meaningful, and the only way that we could have understood these verses is if we first understood what had led up to this. What had led up to this was this complexity. The complexity really is, who is Yosef? Who are the Bnei Rachel? On the one hand, there's this incredible capacity, incredible capability, this capability that everybody sees, but it comes down to one point. Is Yosef willing to be number two, or does Yosef need to be number one? And if he's number one, then he's number one all by himself and without anybody else. He's an island. Is Yosef going to be an island by himself, or is he going to be number two? And that now becomes complex. Because since he made up with his brothers, it was always a relationship which was not an even relationship. It was not a relationship of equals. And Yosef does this to them, and he speaks only of his father, and he never refers to them as his brothers here. It's my father's extended family. Again, passive aggressive. All of these people, I'll take care of you. And even they say, you know, you're going to kill us. No, I'll take care of you. The dreams have to come true. And the way they're looking at it is the way that Yaakov suddenly sees on his deathbed. Who is this Yosef? And he sees Yeravam. And who's Yeravam? Yeravam can never back down because Yeravam's number one. And who can't he back down to? It's not just that he can't back down to David. It's not just that he can't back to Ben David. It's not that he can't back to Ben Yishai. Who can't he back down to? He can't back down to God. Because that's what happens when you're self-absorbed. That's what happens really when you're a narcissist. You can't even back down to God. So the brothers see this aspect of Yosef from the very beginning. But when we look at Yosef, we're not sure. Because Yosef is always number two. He's number two by Yaakov, number two by Potiphar, number two in prison, number two to Paro. He's never the one. They always see him as number one. Which means essentially the brothers see Yosef as Yeravam. And now there are these hints of idolatry that we've noticed along the way, of polytheism. On the other hand, is there anybody who's more involved with speaking of God and lives God, and when nobody else is watching, lives God than Yosef? And as far as he's concerned, his whole life is guided by God, is there every step of the way. Yosef, therefore, is this incredibly interesting character, but others see this negative of him. In the very last breath that Yosef takes, he creates equality. In the very last breath, he says to them, I need you. And at that moment, Bereishit really does end on a good note. Because at that moment, they all become brothers once again. That was broken on the one hand when they try to get rid of him, and that continues when he puts them in their place. There's no equality. There's no brotherhood. Literally, in the last breath of Yosef's life, in the last scene of Sefer Bereishit, we become Am Yisrael. We become one. We become family. And that's how it's able to say that Moshe Rabbeinu can't leave Egypt without taking Yosef. Of course you have to take Yosef. It's my uncle Yosef. It's my family. So Yosef is complex. Monotheism, polytheism, it's all there. Maybe that's part of a complex personality. Yosef in his life, even though people saw other things, did remain Yosef at tzaddik. Unfortunately, among Yosef's descendants, this other part, this other trait comes out, and that leads to all kinds of horrific behavior.